Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shaudell, and we're here to broadcast to all you foodies out there in Long Island. I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning. You look very... this isn't really a word, it's sort of an adjective, but you look very golfy this morning.
Well, I have a little golfy thing on, you know. I have this, what do they call them? I guess women call them cover-ups, I call them windbreakers or whatever.
It almost looks like a medical garb also. I didn't know if you were my dentist or...
Well, if you want me to pull a tooth, I'm, you know, I have some knife skills. I don't know about the pliers, but...
So here we are, beautiful weather. Again, that must be why you're in your golf attire. And the official... I guess planting season.
Yeah. It's time to get gardening out there, which is always fun for everybody but me. I'm not really a gardener per se. I have access to all manner of vegetables, so it's easier for me to just go. Although, you know, at the club, there's an arboretum next to the club that I, you know, take
the
kids.
What is the club? I always state the
It's name. Called Mill River.
Mill River
Country Club, yeah, golf club, whatever. Country club, I guess, because they have tennis and pool and all that. And a very nice clientele. It's just 300 or 400 families that are members there. But next door is the Bailey's Arboretum, and they have about 1 acre that they've kind of farmed now, and they grow all kinds of lettuce and vegetables and that and the other thing. So I call it Outback Farms because it's out in back of the restaurant, you know, area of the club. So I've been kind of using some of their produce, which is kind of fun, you know. The gardening thing, like, I'm not a gardener per se. I once started a garden in my house out east, but I wasn't out there enough to really kind of tend to it. So between the rabbits, the deer, and the ants, you know, I wound up feeding most of the fauna and wildlife within a square acre or whatever. It was a disaster, to tell you the truth. But, you know, since I have all this access, you know, through my purveyors to any kind of vegetable I want, I pretty much... don't do any farming, and I don't eat at home, so it's not necessary for me to have that. But my daughter, who lives in my house out east now with her family, is, you know, she's a big farmer. I mean, she's got all kinds of stuff growing out there. She probably has, I don't know, maybe an eighth of an acre of vegetables.
Wow.
And stuff. Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, I have a fairly big piece of property, so she's carved out this, you know, farm area for herself.
You're bringing back memories. I've been up and I've been down. I've been...
Sounds like a ZZ Top soon.
Yes.
Tush.
But I actually used to live in Old Westbury, and I lived on a 2-acre parcel.
Mm.
And one of the greatest parts of having that house was having the property. And I had a really, really nice garden.
Did you?
And for me, what made it that much more special was that it was so... large in an area that it actually had to be rototilled each summer.
Really?
So that was pretty cool. So I had my garden and
Schrager Farms there?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then I had that was towards the back of the property, but right adjacent to the house, there had been a dog run, I guess, created. And I remember bringing a lot of gravel into it to use as the surface for it.
Yeah.
And then I had this grand idea, why not make that into a garden also? So all that effort to bring the, I guess they call it pea gravel or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Getting rid of all that stuff. But I planted in that area corn and some root. I just had a great time with it. In the back, I was growing anything from cantaloupe, watermelon, tomatoes.
That's great stuff.
It was just, it really was the best. And now I have a little garden. I grow a couple of tomato plants and some cucumbers or whatever, but I love this time of year.
Yeah, I always say that when I retire, I'm going to do that. But the retirement thing just never seems to come up, you know?
Well, I'm not a perfectionist at this. I mean, some people, you know, they really coddle their garden.
Yeah.
I get it done, and then I enjoy it the best
Do
I can.
Do the best you can, yeah. No, I think for me it would be a fun thing, but I don't see myself retiring. I see myself clutching my chest on the line on a Saturday night, falling down, and then to be going down in a blaze of glory or whatever, you know, on a weekend. Hopefully it'd be after dinner service. But, yeah, I don't know. It just never came up. You know, I think that I have friends that, you know, work jobs, union jobs, this, that, and the other thing, and they commute to the city, and they hate it, you know, and they hate their boss, and they hate, you know. I was just lucky enough to be able to captain my own ship and never really had any of that, you know. So it never really occurred to me to stop, you know. And I still think I have some things to contribute, you know. Now, that may be self-delusion, I don't know, and we'll find out at some point, you know. But the bottom line is I still think I do, and while I do, you know, I look at life as such a gift that I just don't want to waste it, you know what I mean, sitting around doing nothing.
Apropos, and what a great segue.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to share the food.
Please, do tell. Do tell. This is about food, this show, anyway. Yeah. At some point, we usually get to it.
I'm not going to name the restaurant because it really wasn't their fault, but... To me, it's just funny. So my sister gets very aggressive. What are we doing? You know, mommy wants to do this, that, the other, you know. So she called the restaurant and takeout. You had to place your order by 3 o'clock. And I think you had to pick it up by 4 o'clock type of thing. So 3 o'clock's too early to eat.
Yeah, unless you're practicing for Florida.
I mean, again, the weather was nice and whatever. I'm getting old. I just enjoy lackadaisiness, if that's a word.
Yeah.
I'm not in a rush, especially on a day that I know is going to be a day of relaxation.
Sure.
So at any rate, I gave in to everything, and tell me if I'm crazy on this one, and I'll get beat up by my sister. But so she texts me, but it's a group text. It's her husband, her, and me.
Right.
Is there any reason to sort of have a text with... Don't the two of them live together? I might be picky on this, but it just...
Listen, I have people text me and say, call me when you get a chance. Why would you bother to text me? Why don't you just call me? You know?
So I get there at 2 o'clock. I try to be early and you know, be able to be social.
Sure.
I brought a couple of bottles of wine. Nice. I bought some shrimp. And that should have actually started the craziness of the day. I like the big colossal shrimp.
Yeah, yeah.
So Stu Leonard's was doing such a good business, they were out of the colossal.
Were they?
So I got the next size smaller, but it was on sale, so maybe there's a trade out there. But it's definitely not the same.
No, it's not.
And I got cocktail sauce because, as you always say, shrimp needs something.
It does.
So we had that. And then I asked about this a couple of weeks ago. My mom likes Jarlsberg cheese, but at Stop and Shop, they don't have it. Mm-hmm. They have Baby Swiss now or something.
Really?
And I'm not really clear on what Baby Swiss is, but not quite as good as Jarlsberg. So I'm there munching and eating, having some nice wine. As I always tell everybody, you've turned me into a rosé guy.
Oh, yeah.
And our good friend...
Puts the pink in your cheeks, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our good friend Jesse Bon Jovi introduced us to Hampton Waters.
Yes.
And I forget the name of the... vineyard in France that he works, Jean-Luc
Colombo.
Right. Yeah. So he has his own line of rosés, and again, in the same spirit with interesting bottles. I mean, it's the content, it's not the bottle, but
sure.
It's all part of the same.
Yeah, of course.
So I was sharing. I introduced everybody to some rosé, and we're having some appetizers. 3 o'clock comes, and it was like just after 3, and my brother-in-law calls up, and you know, it's late. You know, you're lucky you called when you're calling. You're the last takeout order we're going to get.
You're getting scolded as you're trying to give him an order.
And my brother-in-law had done this whole research project. He pulls out of his man bag his notebook.
Oh, boy.
And he starts talking about what the options are. So, at any rate, my mom and I shared a porterhouse.
Uh-huh.
That's the one you did with the
filet and the strip,
right.
Yeah.
And they got a Chateaubriand.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big filet mignon for two.
And the restaurant was famous for a certain dressing. And last time we asked for extra, and they gave us like a quart. We didn't need that much. So
yeah, yeah.
We didn't order extra dressing. It's all part of the story. And then I'm whispering to my brother-in-law, what about the bread? What about the bread? Oh, yeah, yeah, well, we'll get bread. So lo and behold, they have to go pick it up because it's all about this control thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And last time during the pandemic, I guess there weren't as many people eating in, so there was a lot of craziness about the valet and where you could wait to get your takeout.
Yeah, I know.
And my brother-in-law, he just can make a mountain out of a molehill.
Shakespearean tragedy out of a dinner.
So at any rate, they get the food and they bring it back. Again, last time we had like a quart of salad dressing. This time it was a thimble. And it's a really nice, it's a red Roquefort dressing. So right. it's like a, I guess almost a French with the pieces of the blue cheese in it, or Roquefort. So it's nice to have a little bit more. But
sure.
So that's the way it started.
I got a feeling it's going downhill from here.
And, I know taking out is a delicate art because you can't expect it to be piping hot.
No, most food doesn't travel well.
Compared to, Ruth Chris, when you eat there, and they serve you the steak on the sizzling platter. I knew that wasn't going to be what came to the house.
Did you just blow the whole, I'm not naming the restaurant?
No, that Ruth Chris is
okay,
I'm
just checking.
Saying good things this time about them. At any rate, the steak was lukewarm at that point.
Yeah.
And I went for the bread. Of course, it wasn't there. But again, I'm blessed to be able to have had this intimate, nice celebration with Mom.
Of course,
Mom was very happy or whatever. It all played out well.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter that there were imperfections. But I really do miss going to a restaurant and just having that freshly cooked, brought to the table experience. I don't get it that much anymore.
Well, I think you're free to go now. I mean, restaurants have never been the spreader, of COVID. I mean, restaurants have always been probably one of the safer places to be if you're going to be out because we're constantly cleaning,
I have to laugh because just last night I have friends that moved down to Florida and she goes, there's a lot of restaurants that are closing. So I guess there's still issues. So the way she said it, and I'm laughing because of what you just said, she said, I can understand the restaurant closing because the kitchen came down with COVID. But what's going on that all these restaurants aren't? Oh, they live in a country club
community
in Florida. So there might be three restaurants serving the community.
Sure.
And instead of them all being open, one is open for lunch.
Dinner, yeah, trying to concentrate the business.
Whatever. Yeah. So she was complaining. But the way she said it, she goes, so the restaurant comes down with COVID,
So what's the big deal? you're going to see a big shaking out anyway. A lot of restaurants haven't survived the COVID thing. And the business climate has changed a lot, even without COVID. I mean, the bottom line has disappeared. It's almost gone the way of the public. You have the great restaurants, it's like the rich and the poor, there's no middle class anymore in restaurants. Those are the ones that are dying out because their margins are so small. You have the cheaper ones like the McDonald's and stuff. They'll always survive because of, the clientele base is huge, and your really elite restaurants, most of them will survive because you have such an elite, clientele.
It's definitely an interesting environment. Again, I'm full of stories. So Saturday night, for some reason, we've been going to a lot. I have been going to restaurants, but I eat outdoors usually.
Right.
But I went to another Mediterranean restaurant in Woodbury, and we had talked about it recently. O'Niro.
Yeah, O'Niro.
Taverna O'Niro. Wonderful, wonderful restaurant. Pretty packed. They space the tables, but the tables are normally spaced so that it would comply anyway. So, again, trying to be cautious, I said I'd like to eat outdoors. So originally when my friend called up for the reservation, it was her birthday, she wanted us, we haven't seen them in so long, she wanted to go there, so she called up and she couldn't get a reservation for a Saturday night. And then I call up and magically I got a reservation. And I didn't even use your name, Tom.
Good, I'm glad.
So I asked for outdoors and I'm figuring they're going to say, well, we can try. But they said, sure. We get there. They put us out on this porch. There's nobody there. It's like, I guess they abandoned the concept of the outdoor eating at this restaurant, which is okay.
Yeah.
So I asked if we could dine inside, and we were able to. And again, the restaurant was flourishing. But what's interesting...
Flourishing on Saturday.
Well, of course.
There's always an asterisk on Saturday.
But I really do buy into what you just said. There seems to be high-end and then your everyday type restaurant or whatever. But yeah, I mean, a restaurant like where I dined, I don't do it every week, but it was probably $200 for the couple. But I did it right this time. We did branzino. We did some grilled calamari. It was really nice. We did a couple of different salads. But it was really, really enjoyable. Again, had what I call the Greek salad. But in these restaurants, it's usually just cubed cucumbers.
Tomato. That's like a country-style Greek salad, yeah.
And delicious. Yeah. Delicious.
You know, I think what's happened now is if you take the really... you know, high-end restaurants, the ingredients are very expensive. So the restaurant becomes very expensive, and the clientele shrinks to whoever has enough money to go there. The people who have that kind of money will always go to those kinds of restaurants because the money's not – that price range isn't critical for them, you know. They're comfortable with it. The inexpensive places will always have the clientele, the McDonald's. I mean, every time I pass Chick-fil-A on Old Country Road in Westbury, there's a line around the block,
right? We have one here, and even for breakfast.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's an interesting model because it's a fast food restaurant, but they have ambassadors outside taking your order. It's different than going to Wendy's where you just go up to the window. Yeah. It's just so different.
No, they do it better. But, you know, the problem with the mid-price restaurants now is that the food costs are the same for them as they are for the elite restaurants. They don't use quite the luxury ingredients like you might find in a high-end restaurant, maybe a, you know, truffle or prime meats or foie gras, whatever. But still, I mean, the stuff is high. So they've had to increase their prices. And now you're dealing with a clientele that's a little more price sensitive. So when the mid-priced restaurant is priced almost as much as the expensive restaurant, you know, they start to lose people, you know, because they're just not comfortable spending that kind of money. And I think that if they lower their prices to get more people in, they take it on the other end where they're not making any money. So why are we doing this? We're just spinning our wheels here, you know, losing a couple of bucks trying to make everybody happy. So it's really an unfair spot that they're in, you know. It's one of the reasons that I'm kind of not doing it so much anymore
I say it every day to people. I miss you having what I call a retail restaurant. I know you're the executive chef where you are, but unless you're really a member of the club or get invited to a
function,
event,
sure,
you're not able to eat it. I got to ask you, though, we did order the branzino, so I was glad we ordered a fish. Not that it wasn't good. I have this vision in my head of, like, a crisp, like the skin being crisp, and I get this wasn't. I mean, but I don't know if that's just technique or...
Yeah, it's tricky, too. I mean, you know, you can do it on a grill, you can do it in a sauté pan, but, you know, it's got to be served immediately because... You know, time is your enemy when it comes to food, you know. It could come out like that, and 3 minutes later it could get, you know, because steam or whatever, you know, it gets a little more soggy.
I mean, I guess sometimes they fillet the fish at the table. This they didn't, which didn't bother me. Hmm. But what if I wanted to be a little more adventurous, again, at this Mediterranean-type restaurant, because I'm so laid back and usually let Carrie and this other, our friend Cindy, order, they're like very into choosing the menu.
Oh, yes.
But I guess there must have been swordfish on the menu. There must have been tuna. But what would be... branzino today has become so common. It used to be not...
Yeah, I remember 20 years ago going into a place in the city and seeing branzino for the first time 25 years ago, whatever it was. And I said, oh, what's that? Mediterranean bass. All right, I'll try it. You know, I had it. And then I came out to, I think it was at Mirabelle, my friend Guy Rouge's place back when it was in the old location in St. James. And he had it as a special, right? So I went in there and I said, oh, branzino, right? Like two in the same week. It was weird. So I had it. It was great, you know. And then I went to a third place, like 3 or 4 days later, And the guy says to me, tonight, signore, we have a beautiful Bronzino special. And I looked at him. I said, I am so sick of Bronzino. You have no idea. He looked at me like I had nine heads because nobody ever saw it before.
So the tuna and the swordfish would be more like a steak. I mean, you know, that type of consistency.
Yeah.
What would be the other, what would you, might you suggest or would you look for on a menu in the genre of the Bronzino.
Like the whitefish that are mild and, you know, I think all of the, you know, local sea bass to me is like a treasure, that black skin local sea bass that's fabulous. I just saw a blackfish on the menu at one of my fish purveyors, which is a great fish, and you don't see much of it around. I mean, they come around in the spring and the fall, you know, more in the fall than the spring. I very rarely see them this time of year. But I just saw him the other day. If you can get it, it's called Tautog sometimes, T-A-U-T-O-G. But it's blackfish, and that's a very sweet, mild, you know, white, flaky fish. You know, fluke and flounder, obviously, from Montauk is fabulous. But there's a lot of, like, red snappers in that zone, striped basses. Striped bass is a little more chunky than that, you know. But it's white and it's mild, you know, when it's... When it's fresh, striped bass is really a funny fish. When you first get it out of the water, it's really gorgeous, and you fillet it, and it's got this beautiful white, you know, like bluish white color. And after a day or two, I mean, nothing happens to the fish. It tastes the same, but it gets a little grayer for some reason. There's some kind of pigment or whatever that goes on in the skin. But, you know, again, you get, those are the least oily of the fish. And oil is what really constitutes the flesh, you know, sort of, not content, but consistency. You know, like salmon, mackerel, tuna, swordfish, they're all oily fish. Those are high in that fish oil, the fish oil. What's the name for the fish oil? I'm asking you. Yeah, I'm the only one here. You know what I mean? I could make a call, but it's not good radio. You know, it'll come to me. There's a name for it. Anyway, it's very high in the good for you stuff.
So the long and short, I should pay more attention to what's on the menu.
You should pay more attention. Yeah, but there's a lot of fish now that, you know, I see coming around that you didn't see before, like barramundi. You know, which is, you know, originally from Australia. I think they grow it here now. And that's kind of a fun fish to play with. I see these, like, Alaskan rockfish and very white, mild, you know, meaty kind of, you know, fun things to play with.
I guess I'm getting a little too comfortable with my choices. I need to be a little more adventurous. It's interesting, these Mediterranean restaurants, and I didn't realize it, where I was, but I know, like, Lamani, specifically Lamani, they have the fish on display on the ice,
uh-huh.
and they had that also at the restaurant in Woodbury. We ended the meal with my favorite, which is that Greek yogurt with the honey and cherry sauce.
Good
and,
stuff.
Incredible.
You know, it's funny. The Greeks, they do fish really well. And I think Greece isn't an island, but Santorini is. And, you know, they're right on the sea. And, you know, even if you look at Greek communities in New York, Astoria, it's right on the Sound. You know, Greenport is a huge Greek community in Greenport. And all they do is fish. It's, you know, the Greek fishermen with the hat and the whole thing. You know, it's iconic, you know. I think they're a fishing culture. You know, the Greeks. So they tend to do fish well, and they treat it with a reverence it deserves, you know. Like you say, you go into Lamani, you have that fish display there, and, you know, it's, you know, and they do it simply, which is interesting to me. You know, I spend half my life trying to concoct ways to make fish taste like something else, you know what I mean? Because I get that it's fishy, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, we sauce it, we grill it, we vinaigrette it, we do whatever we do with it, you know. But the Greeks tend to just grill it with olive oil and lemon, a little oregano, and it's perfect, you know? I mean, you don't really need anything else. But, you know, what we do is, you know, it's like with the musician trying to find the missing note, you know? There's only five notes in the pentatonic. You try and make six, and it sounds crazy, you know? So
I'm dining at the restaurant, was celebrating my friend's birthday, and I have a tear in my eye because we started the evening with cocktails. The family that we're with are really into wine, so many times we morph into wine. I don't think we did that night. but they had on the menu the specialty cocktails. I'm not into that. The girls usually are.
Yeah.
But they had, and this is where the tear came from, pineapple-infused vodka.
Nice. There you go.
Which was a specialty at Juul.
Yes, it was.
And it makes me think about one question for you on that. It was always brought to the table frothy. There was like a foam on top. Did they just shake it or something?
Probably, yeah.
It was just really cool. So, again, the restaurant we dined at was wonderful. But your pineapple-infused vodka just was that much better.
Oh, I'm not a spirits guy. But, what's the point of drinking vodka other than to get high? You know what I mean? Vodka has no flavor at all. So if you flavor it, then I get it. You know, okay, it tastes like pineapple or it tastes like, you know, whatever you're going to do with it. But I mean, for me, a vodka martini, I'd be questioning why you would drink something like that. Gin, I get it. Gin has a flavor. Vodka has no flavor, you know?
Well, and people think there is. I mean, you know, if I bring my mother the wrong vodka, it's like...
Well, I challenge anybody to a blind vodka tasting. You know, I mean, if you see what's on the label, yeah, you know the difference. If you don't, I promise you, you won't, you know?
Yeah, I'm usually a tequila guy, but again, and especially when I would go to Juul, I had to get the pineapple-infused vodka. Again, it was nice. I can't stand these different crazy
martinis that
people get or whatever.
It's people who don't like to taste the alcohol that want to use it for other purposes, you know?
But we were also talking a few minutes ago about things that changed during the pandemic. And one thing that was really cool is that you were allowed to take out alcohol. I don't know if they're going to continue that. Probably going to pull back the strings. And then also these structures that are outside, even though people are eating inside, I think people enjoyed eating outside. And some of the places, like when I was driving in Woodbury the other morning, and there was the shopping center where our friends at Rustic Root are.
Mm-hmm.
There must have been 3 or 4 circus-like tents up in the parking lot.
Right.
And that's an upscale area, and those tents look really cool and everything.
Sure.
But I wonder if the municipalities are going to continue to let the people take advantage of these special conditions that they put out there for helping businesses survive.
Yeah, I think that, you know, with most municipalities that I've dealt with, the answer is no. What's the question? it's a bureaucracy. It's bureaucratic stuff. They live to tell you no, and then you try and figure out why later. So that's why I always thought it was easier to ask for forgiveness than permission, right?
You're right.
Like they always say. Hey. So I think people will continue to do it. But I'm kind of amused by the way that the human condition, we're constantly kidding ourselves about things, you know? And maybe it's the reality that you don't want to face or whatever. It's like, you know, this whole eating outside in a tent with 4 walls, you know, a fake air conditioner, heaters on there, and everybody crammed in there. What's the difference in eating outside or inside?
You're right to an extent. So that makes me think of the reality and the landscape of Long Island.
Yeah.
So I've never dined there, but the Paul brothers,
mm-hmm.
they own the Bryant, which is Jericho Turnpike and 110. And that was designed before the pandemic. It's the old TGIF.
Yeah, the old Fridays.
Fridays restaurant. They were very lucky. They had like a big outdoor dining patio. Again, before the pandemic. So when we went through all the craziness, they took that, extended it out into the parking lot. But they had these windows that lifted up.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful setup. It worked out for them. But one of the other restaurants that I ate at recently was Kima in Roslyn.
Right.
And they had a beautiful tent. Again, it was one of these Mediterranean restaurants. But they made the inside of the tent feel like you were in Greece. There was a tree above and everything. It was really cool. But it was open in the sense that, just like you said, there's some tents that are totally...
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I think as Johnny Carson would say, I'm showing my age, Johnny Carson. Hermetically sealed.
Yeah.
But this one had, the windows were open. It was a perfect scenario because it was one of those Saturday nights when the weather was nice. You enjoyed being outside. It wasn't overtly cold, as compared to my friends that dined on the at a boatyard in Merrick, Salt, I believe it was.
Yeah, Salt.
In November, the end of November. And that's not a tent. That really is open on the dock.
Yeah.
And they were in their...
Yeah, snorkel jackets and stuff. Yeah.
That's not fun.
No, it's not fun. And I just think that there's this delusion or self-delusion about eating in a tent that's any different than a dock. It's like, look, it's all phases of life. Facial tissue. Okay? We all know the facial tissue is toilet paper, but they won't put that on the label. Why? Does anybody ever give you a piece of toilet paper and say, wipe that smile off your face? It's not facial tissue. That's not where it's used. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why today's world is so great. Advertising today, I mean, you couldn't talk about toilet paper on TV.
No.
Now they got Bear Families and this and that, and they're singing about wiping.
Oh, yeah. No, now you can do it. It's completely crazy. You know, they get the bears on it, but you can't have people do it. It has to be a bear cartoon, you know. It's hilarious. Anyway, let's take a little break, and we'll pay some bills here, and we'll come back, and maybe we'll talk about food. Who knows?
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and food network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, so speaking of restaurants, finally, I went to our friend Marco Pellegrino's restaurant last week, Osteria Umbra.
Nice. You've spoken about that a lot lately.
Yeah, no, he does a great job. I mean, I admire Marco's cooking, and I admire him as a person. He's just a very nice man, very welcoming. He's the quintessential Italian chef. You know, he's kind of like rotund and not jolly, but very friendly and talented. I mean, he's into the food, and he cooks like he was in Italy, you know. I mean, he's from Umbria, and he cooks like he's there. He doesn't, you know, make a lot of concessions to the Italian-American tastes.
Sit at the table with us and talk with us on the radio.
I spoke to him about it. He's a little shy about coming on because his accent's a little thick, you know. I said, but we'll figure it out, you know.
We always do.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people who didn't speak English at all, so, you know. anyway, it's just a great little restaurant. If you in that area, he's on Terry Road in Smithtown. And he's in a strip center. He's like the center piece store there, you know. But a great little place. He's got a big open hearth fire that he cooks on, almost like, years ago I went to Montepulciano. And I was staying at an estate called the Finetti Estate, and Elisabetta Finetti had inherited the vineyard from her father, and she was the winemaker and running the thing. And we stayed in a cottage on the vineyard about a mile from the main house. And we were invited for Sunday dinner. And I'm having a little problem here. And I didn't want to go because I don't speak Italian. You know, it would be myself, my girlfriend at the time, and, you know, seven Italians at the table not knowing what's going on. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I really don't want to do this. And then, but the other half of me said, well, I don't want to insult anybody. I mean, they're nice enough to let us stay here, and they've given us a tour, and it's great, you know. let's just tough it out and we'll go, right? So I went. It turns out her husband spoke English, and so he was the saving grace. But I was treated to a dinner where Grandma cooked in this open hearth fireplace in the dining room in this house that the family had been in for like 700 years, you know. It was crazy, you know, and we have Levittown. We move every 20 minutes, you know. We're moving to a different place here in America. Over there, the families live in places for, you know, centuries. So she was doing this kind of 6-7 course thing, and she kept, you know, she had a big, long, like, pizza peel spatula. She would take things, you know, pots out of the fireplace. It was crazy. It was like a Fellini movie, you know, and it was one of the best meals I ever had. And not that her cooking was all that sophisticated, but it was just between, you know, being in Italy at the table with a bunch of native people and grandma, you know, cooking what she does every Sunday in the fireplace. It was crazy. So Marco's got that setup. He's got that open hearth fire that he cooks on. He's got a big rotisserie out there. He does, like, you know, birds and small pigs and things like that. So we had I had a pasta that was actually cooked. I'll put an asterisk next to cooked, but cooked inside a shell of Reggiano. You know, when you get Parmesan Reggiano, you know, commercially, I can get it in like a whole wheel, a half wheel, a quarter wheel. And so this is a whole wheel, which is, it's probably maybe a foot and a half in diameter, you know, and maybe about a foot high. And it's hollowed out. You know, all the cheese is taken out because they use the cheese for other things. And they have this bowl, this cheese bowl, essentially. So what they do is they'll put a little, what they call Everclear in there. It's like an alcohol, you know, and light it on fire, and that'll melt some of the cheese. And what they do is they'll make like linguine or something like that with Reggiano, and I think they had some guanciale in their bacon or whatever. And they'll do that in the kitchen, and they bring it out in a pot. And they'll put that under the, you know, the gyrodon that they're cooking on. And when he's got enough cheese melted, you know, he'll scrape it down on the fire and you get this little pool of cheese in the center. He'll take the pasta and put it in there and then toss it around and make a big show. It's really more of a show than anything else, you know. So we had that. It was great, you know. And then we had, I'm usually a fish guy when I go out. But just to change it up, we had suckling pig, which was really, really good. He did it with a nice little sauce.
So how is that served? Is it chunks of meat or is it slices?
Yeah, slices, chunks, whatever, you know. But it was great. It had little mashed potatoes and a salad, you know. Just kind of a perfect thing, you know. And it was a perfect portion. It wasn't too much, you know. You ate it, you didn't feel like you swallowed a small farm animal or whatever, you know. It was great. And then, you know, of course, I'm trying not to eat dessert because I don't really like dessert. I eat it out of curiosity. If I see something on the dessert menu, I'm thinking that was a great idea. Let me check it out. I'll do that. And I always wind up finishing the damn thing, you know what I mean? But so they sent us out two desserts, and it was sorbet and crazy, you know?
I want to go back to the suckling pig. So, I mean, what does it taste like? I mean, I know you can eat ham that has a very distinctive taste, and you can have pork chops or pork cutlets, and it's more of a
well, ham is cured, you know. It's messed with. That's why it's pink. It's got curing salts and everything else, and it's really not a lot good for you, honestly. Fresh pork is a different story. You know, suckling pig tastes like roast pork, you know, any kind of roast pork, but it's a little, I'd say it's probably a little more tender because it's, you know, younger, but it just has that beautiful kind of, you know, mild, you know, flavor. It was great. It was just a real good choice and a fun meal. Marco wasn't there that night, but I guess he sent word to send us out desserts and all of that stuff. So he did that. Just a generous, wonderful guy.
You just said something that I have to comment on. You know, in life, it's so cool to receive, but not when you ask for it. So just like you said, you didn't ask for any special treatment. Somehow it happened. We were up at Bethpage. Now it's called the Heritage Room up at Bethpage.
Oh, at the State Park, you mean?
Yeah. And this week the weather's been so incredible. But to sit on the outdoor patio in the back, out looking out over the black course is like unbelievable.
My favorite course in the world.
So, and you could probably play it pretty well. But we were sitting out there, and I didn't know what type of traffic there was there because of the a lot of people coming off the golf course hanging out or whatever.
Sure.
So I called over to the general manager, and I said we were coming over from the radio station, and could you just reserve two tables for us because we were going to be like 14 people. And the bill comes, and they, we bought the first round for you guys. I didn't ask for that.
Yeah.
And when you have something like that, it's just really, again, not asking for something and being appreciated is a really cool thing as compared to some of the people in your book.
Yeah, well, that's the other half, you know. I mean,
but I got to bring up a funny story. So we record this show during the week. So yesterday I was at Rally Motors, and there's a young lady there, and we're talking. She lives in this area, meaning Melville, Farmingdale area. And, of course, she knows Tom Shordell and Jewel.
Yeah.
And her story was that she almost got to bartend for you.
Actually,
I think it was a kingfish she was going to bartend.
Uh-huh. What was her name, you know?
Yes. Her name is Lisa Bluestein.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember, yeah. Somebody put me in touch with her. I think it was an aunt or a mother or somebody. You know, my daughter
they
was
lived
living
over at Country Point. I think the parents just moved to Florida. It's such a small world.
Yeah, as I recall, we couldn't connect because she had some limitations on days she could work because she had a day job or whatever.
We
couldn't really kind of put it together. Yeah.
Right. She knew you from Jewel, but she was going to bartend at the
I remember. I remember her name. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's, you know, you read all these stories about, you know, you can't find employees. That's the other problem with the restaurant business now is it's almost impossible to staff them, you know.
Where is everybody?
They're home on a couch getting unemployment, you know. That's where they are. I mean, you can pretend it's different, but that's what it is. I mean, you can't give people, you know, you can't pay people to stay home and expect them to go to work. You know what I mean? You can supplement when they're suffering. I get that part, you know. But, you know, if you make it a full-time job, you know, why would they get a job if they have one?
This working from home is really interesting because my son, whose office is in Great Neck, has been working remotely.
Yeah.
And I keep preaching to him. He's 25 years old that, you know, work comes first. Work is what gives you the means by which to play.
Sure.
So recently, I forget where they went. They went on a trip somewhere. They went down to Florida. And he spent a pretty penny going down there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he asked me, you know, did I overpay? I said, honestly, you did.
Yeah.
But you don't go away all the time. So, you know, again, life is full of moderation.
Balance.
So then this week he's been working out of the Hamptons. His friend's parents have a house out there. Because you're working remotely, he's doing his thing during the day, and I guess they're going out enjoying themselves at night. And again, every time I speak to him, as long as you're getting your work done. And then last night he calls me. He goes, oh, there's an opportunity to go to Nashville, a couple of the guys or whatever. And I check with work. They're cool with it. It's Memorial Day weekend, but I'm able to do what I have to do during the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, Nick, you're a young guy. You work hard. As long, again, as you understand that if you didn't have the job, you wouldn't have the means by which to go out.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're young. You've gone through a lot of crap, just like everybody else during the pandemic.
Sure.
You're responsible. You decided to get the vaccine on your own, and you did. So, again, just, you know, don't make it that you're taking a weekend trip and then, you know, going Wednesday through Sunday. Work hard. Enjoy life. Be smart.
Yeah. If he needs any restaurant advice for the Hamptons, I'm pretty tapped in, you know what I mean, as they say.
You think?
Hey, you know, speaking about that, I was reading an article about the top 25 rosés of the year. And Long Island has two of them, Channing Daughters, Rosé of Cabernet Franc, and Domaine Wolfer.
Wolfer Estates is one of my favorite
restaurants. Great
restaurant, vineyards.
Yeah.
My go-to there is the Summer in a Bottle, which comes in a white and a rosé.
Right.
And then they have another rosé that's not It's I think it's called Wolver Estates or something, but it's not.
It's in the estate rosé.
The flowery bottle.
It's actually the more serious of the two. That's the one. That's the one that
and
was.
And I believe that's what I had Mother's Day.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's great. I was just with Richie, who's the vineyard manager there at Wolver. Last Monday night, Jimmy Waters, you know, who moved to North Carolina, came into town. So we had a little get together. It was Jim Waters, who was owned Waters Crest Vineyards, Ron Gerler and his wife, Joanne, and they own Jamesport Vineyards, and Richie Pizzicano and his wife Soraya, and they own Roanoke Vineyards, and he's the vineyard manager at Wolver Estates also. And Anthony Cennino, who owns Cennino Vineyards, you know, and myself, who owns nothing. And so we had a little celebration because we hadn't seen Jimmy in a while. He's been traipsing around the country following his daughters in the Air Force, you know. So he's visiting his daughter in Oklahoma and his family in Indiana, and he just bought a house in North Carolina. He's kind of semi-retired, you know. So, yeah, it was fun to see all those guys, you know. And we haven't been getting together in the last year or so as much as we used to because of all the obvious reasons. And, you know, it's just fun to drink wine, different wine with, you know, winemakers and get their perspective on it. We had two Burgundies, two red Burgundies. We had an Hermitage from the Rhone. I bought a Magnum of 2003 Bedel Merlot, which was actually the wine of the night. It was spectacular. And, you know, they age differently in Magnums. Magnum, for people who don't know, is a double bottle. But the bigger the bottle, the longer it takes to age because there's more going on in there and there's more wine, you know, whatever. So, but it's really interesting. I've drunk, I would say, not a ton, but a lot of older Long Island wine, you know, from the mid-90s, even from the 80s. And it holds up real well, really. This aged beautifully. I mean, you know, all the tannins had laid down. The fruit was gorgeous. It was clear as a bell. I mean, it was like it just came off the assembly line, you know. Really good, nuanced wine. And I'm hosting, in a couple of weeks, a blind wine tasting for a bunch of guys at the club, you know, who are dyed in the wool Napa wine guys, you know, they drink Napa cabs. One guy drinks Silver Oak all the time. Another guy's a Camus guy. And I used to like those wines a lot more than I do now. Camus got sold to a big corporate entity, you know, and the wine's just not the same. And, I mean, they're fine, but...
That's the vineyard that also has Conundrum?
Yeah, yeah. They make good wine. I'm not knocking it, but they used to make great wine, you know. And I don't know if it's my taste change or more sophisticated or less sophisticated. Whatever happened, but... You know, I'm more of a cold climate guy. You know, I like Bordeaux's better. I like I actually like Long Island better than most California wines, honestly. But, you know, the bottom line is, and I told this guy, Lance, who's an interesting cat. He has a company that builds, like, does construction in the city, but he constructs, like, skyscrapers, you know, not just houses, you know, these huge, huge 50-story buildings. So he's pretty well-oiled, and he's got, you know, he's got the ability to buy whatever he wants. And I said, you know, this is going to be fun for you. And he's an interesting guy because he wants to learn, you know, as opposed to some people who are afraid of blind tastings because they're afraid that they're not going to look as wine smart as they thought they were, you know. Because you can really look like an ass, you know what I mean, making some calls on these blind tastings. I mean, I always say that I've been to blind tastings where the only thing I got right was the color, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be good at it because I'm not good at being descriptive.
Well, it's not even that. It's just you don't have enough of a Rolodex in your head.
I mean, I would be able to say if I like it or not.
Yeah,
but
sure.
That's about the extent. I wouldn't be able to say it was... I maybe could talk a little bit about earthy.
You know, honestly, most of that stuff doesn't matter. It's just verbiage, you know. At the end of the day, it's word salad.
If it's thick or if it's thin.
If you look at the ratings, like in The Spectator, and these guys will go on this rant about, you know, is this with black cherry coffee notes, a little bit of tar licorice, you know, number two pencil. I mean, all this stuff. And then by the third one, they're right back to the same thing. You run out of things to say. I mean.
Well, but that makes me think when the thickness or the viscosity is, I guess, the legs of the wine.
Yeah.
Is that just like the texture by which it goes down?
Yeah, it's the body of the wine. It's like some wines are thinner than others. Others have this, this textural element to them where you can taste the, it's almost like an oilier, you know, kind of, not oily in the sense of.
So if it's very thin, it might be too bland. It might have a great taste, but if it had more, it would be that more.
I don't think it's that. I think it is or it isn't, and I don't think it makes it better because it is. I've had, you know, textured wines that I didn't like, and there's a grape called Schiava, which is as light as you can possibly get for a red. It almost looks like a rosé. It's that light, and it's just packed with fruit, you know, sometimes where you just go, whoa. Even Burgundies. I mean, Burgundies can be light in color and light in viscosity and just powerful wines, you know. So I don't think it's that, and I don't think that the descriptive part is really important. I think what's important is you find out which wines you like and which wines you don't, or which ones you like better than others is probably a better way to say it. And it's really the purest way to learn because you're not poisoned by anything you read on the label. And there are very few people who can look at a, I'll say like a Long Island red and, you know, a first growth Bordeaux and taste them both and prefer the red.
But isn't it a wonderful Long Island red world we live in today? Again, as we resume a sense of normalcy, you go back 40 years ago, there really wasn't many wine tastings at a liquor store.
No, there weren't any. I mean
they
know,
were, first of all the liquor stores were like neighborhood joints.
Well, you know, the wine thing really exploded in the 80s. You know, it wasn't until then that, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, Matus Rosé was the big thing, you know, when I was a kid, you know, in restaurants.
Yeah.
Nobody had a serious wine list. And even when I was starting out in my own business in the 80s, wine lists weren't that serious. I mean, you know, you had, you know, a couple of wines here and there. You would usually contact a company like Empire or Southern, and they would print up a list for you of their, you know, 5-6 things they wanted to sell you, and they would do the printing for you. That was the hook, you know? And as wine became more popular and more people got into it, then it turned into a whole, it morphed into this juggernaut that it is now.
No,
you know?
I mean, again, back then, I guess wine tours weren't popular. I guess it wasn't as public inviting as it is now.
No, and it started, like I said, it started in the 80s and people started to do wine dinners and then that got popular and, you know, to the point where McDonald's was doing them, you know, and then it was just, you know, turned into a cartoon thing, you know. You had these, like, little pubs who didn't know really how to handle those things. You know, charging $100 for a 4-course dinner was ridiculous, you know. But what's great about it all is it just opened up the world to all of these wines that were kind of well-kept little secrets in different parts of the world, you know? I mean, even now in Italy, you know, if you study Italian wine, you'll wind up half your time in a classroom and the other half your time in therapy because there's like 2,300, 2,500 varietals in Italy. And every time I turn around, there's another, you know, guy comes in with another one I never heard of. And, you know, where'd this come from? Well, an ancient grape. It's a heritage thing. And they brought it back and, you know, there's so much interesting juice out there. And that's why I pull my hair out with some of these Napa wine guys. And again, there's nothing wrong with Napa wines. I mean, they make great wines out there. But, you know, why limit yourself? I mean, I only drink this. I mean, I can't imagine drinking. There's one guy, he drinks Belglas Pinot Noir every time he comes in. And it's okay. I mean, but it's not real Pinot Noir. I mean, it's just syrupy, sweeter, you know, like jam-packed with fruit and probably has some Syrah or something, you know. And it's fine. It tastes fine. It's good wine. It's well-made, whatever. But you would think at some point, if you really like Pinot Noir, you'd explore Oregon. You'd explore Burgundy. You know, you'd explore South America just to check it out, you know, if nothing else, you know. So, I don't know. I think that just limit yourself, especially in the area, in the era we are in now with winemaking. I mean, there's no bad juice. There's great juice everywhere, you know, at every price level, you know. And I think people should take advantage of that, you know, especially if you want to learn about it, you know.
Well, again, there's just so many opportunities to sample as compared to when we were growing up.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I remember wine lists were, you know, by the glass, red, white, or pink. You had a choice. You had one, and one, you know. Then it started to be, I have a Chardonnay, a Sauvignon Blanc, and a Cabernet, and a Merlot. Those were the, you know, not Sauvignon, Pinot Grigio. You know, now you can go and, you know, most restaurants have 4 or 5, you know, different whites and four or five different reds for you to play with, you know. Some take the other extreme, like I do with Jewel. You know, we had 25 wines by the glass there, you know. So, and in different graduations, you could have a half glass, you could have a whole glass, you could have a taste. So you have, you know, the ability to go completely
those
nuts.
Those were the good old days. I assume there must have been some of the wines refrigerated at the open bottles, but you had a collection on top of the bar that there was that one corner with all the different wines. I mean, literally anything on your menu, one way or another, was available by the glass.
Yeah, it was, well, most of it. I mean, we had some, obviously, that we couldn't do that with, but, you know, it just, you know, I think that the more the customers demand, the more the restaurants respond. And you know, I go to a lot of different restaurants because I'm out all the time, and I very rarely see, how should I put this? Not very rarely. I rarely see very well thought out wine lists in the restaurants. I see a lot of lists that are put together by salesmen, and I can tell right away when that is. I know what the wines are that they use. I see a lot of times as an afterthought from the restaurateur standpoint, you can tell he's not into wine and it's just, you know, whatever. I see a lot of stuff that I'm just doing this to make some money. So I'll see like $4 bottles of wine being, you know, $12 a glass. You know, so there's all kinds of shenanigans going on out there. But I very rarely see, you know, real well thought out, you know, wine list for the wine drinker where you have, you know, different varietals at different prices and interesting things for people to try. And it's really not that hard. It's not that much different than you know, other than the fact that you just want to buy closeout wines and sell them at premium prices. I mean, I get it. It's economics. It's fine. You know, I mean, you're allowed to do that. But I think there should be just a little more on the side of the customer where you're just offering him a, you know, her a different experience.
So
you know?
My afterthought is, what happened to your wine collection from Jewel and then Kingfish?
Well, Jewel's wine was sold with the place, you know. Kingfish, I have most of it home, you know, which is fine. I mean, I'll use it, you know. There was some Kingfish wines that I sold to the club, you know, but a majority of it is in my house.
And am I right? And we've talked about it on the show before. You had a really interesting oceanic art collection at Kingfish. Mm-hmm. It was that Asian.
Yeah, yeah. I can't think of the name of it. It begins with a K.
Painting or something? Or fish prints?
Yeah. I can't think of it.
But at any rate, you took that out to a mono, you said, right?
Some of it's in a mono, some of it's a lure, some of it's in my house. You know, so we distributed it around. And I may use it at some point, someplace else. Who knows, you know? I don't know what's going to happen. Would I do another restaurant again? You know, maybe on the perfect conditions I would, you know? It would have to be perfect, though. It's not like it's my first one, so, you know, I don't have the same monkey jumping at a banana thing that I had when I was a kid. And, you know, I understand how difficult it is, and I understand the consequences of, you know, not succeeding. And I don't want to, I don't know if I want to put myself in that position at this point in my life, you know, but if the right thing came, yeah, I would do that. I would do it for sure. A, because it's what I do, and two, because I've never really lost the excitement of it, you know. There's something exciting about, you know, a new venture and being able to, you know, kind of put it together and watch it grow and watch it succeed. Like I said, I've probably been on the upside of about 23 of these things over the years. And, you know, I've had two that were, you know, went down completely in a ball of flames. One was my fault and one wasn't. And then Kingfish, which was, you know, just a victim of COVID. I mean, there's really nothing you can do about that, you know. So, you know, out of 23, I'm 20 and 3, you know what I mean? You know, if you're in baseball, if you hit one out of three, you're in the Hall of Fame.
Well, your collection of restaurants were interesting in that on their own, they were fine dining establishment.
Yeah.
Jewel being spectacular because of the ambiance that you created. It was like I wrote the commercial that we aired on the radio station, and I think I said Las Vegas comes to Long Island.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was all of that.
Kingfish in itself was unbelievable. It had that subway tile, that the one by one tiles which also resembled to me a restaurant in Woodhaven, London Lenny's,
which
also had that decor where I was talking about before, where the fish is laid out on the River Bay.
Yeah.
Another Hall Brothers restaurant from the past.
Yeah,
used to do that, but it was architecturally such a nice restaurant, Kingfish. You had the industrial ducting showing.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the color orange. There was an orange decor.
Yeah, it's pretty.
The fish prints, and then just the way it was laid out. You had like an oyster bar, and then you had a common table.
Yeah, yeah.
And the different rooms. So it gave the ability to have different levels of casualness. You know, you had your dining room was a little more serious, same food everywhere, right, but you could be more Saturday night, feel a little more formal, or you could sit in the entryway where you walked into the restaurant.
All right, well, now that you've brought me to tears and I'm thoroughly depressed, we have to say goodbye. It's the end of the show.
Oh, God.
All right, we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which are, as always, life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections, from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming, personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience, and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.